the first university chapter of its kind. We want you to get involved. Together, we can educate students about sport for development, help raise money, and teach children here in the Lower Mainland about the importance of sport and a healthy lifestyle. So check us out at www.interchange.ubc.ca/RTPUBC.
It's the Anti-Anti-Vax Web Attack edition of Radio Free Thinker. This week, we feature web wisdom focused on rebutting, refuting, and repudiating the anti...
This is Dan from Greymaker.
This is Sasha the What.
Howdy, folks. We're the Bitterweed Drawn.
This is Zach from Black Breath.
Hi, this is Audie from Broken Bones.
Hello, Vancouver. This is Carolyn Mark.
I'm Water Crime Guide.
This is Dan Mangan.
Hey, this is David Pepke from Denmark.
This is Dylan Ozick from Slingshot.
Hi, this is Dick Valentine from Electric City.
Hi, everybody. This is Fred Penner on the Radio Waves.
This is Fred Schneider.
This is Colin from GBH.
Hi, this is the Gearing Up Inventors.
Hi, this is Ben Ditto from The Gossip.
Hi, this is Brian from Hellshock.
This is Scruffmouth the Scribe.
I'm Shani from Inepsy.
This is Sab Gray from Iron Cross.
Hey, we're J plus J plus J.
This is Jack Mercer from Jack Mercer and the Whiskey Bandits.
It's James Wood. Half of Mega Bear.
This is Jeron Paxton, American musician.
This is Swami Bill and the Shameless Weed Hounds from New Orleans, Louisiana, east of the Mississippi.
Hi, this is John Boutte from New Orleans, Louisiana.
This is Jesse Laborde.
I'm Peter Mansbridge.
Hi, this is Ron McLean of Hockey / Movie Night in Canada.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, also on the web, citr.ca. In UBC, University of British Columbia, in Vancouver, Canada. Have our people contact your people, won't you?
It's the Anti-Anti-Vax Web Attack edition of Radio Free Thinker. This week, we feature web wisdom focused on rebutting, refuting, and repudiating the anti-vax propaganda in the wake of the Disneyland measles epidemic. Let's begin episode 285.
It's time for Radio Free Thinker, the show that applies skepticism and critical thinking to everyday issues. The place where reason and reality cross swords, politics, religion, economics, and of course, science. Now let's get ready to be skeptical.
The cosmos is also within us. We're made of sparks. We are away. The cosmos can know itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are others, and we have traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
Hello and welcome. Tis I, Don, your skeptical philosopher and political scientist. This week, I'm going to introduce my audience to a podcast I've grown to like. It's in many ways very similar to my web wisdom shows. It's sort of a collection of third-party shows and presentations and such that are intended to educate, entertain, and expand people's information bubble. So let's sit back and listen, but fair warning, this may cause frustration and anger at the ignorance of others. Let's hope this show might be a vaccine against that. Let's listen now.
In 1998, an article was published in The Lancet that followed the cases of 12 children with developmental regression and gastrointestinal symptoms, such as diarrhea or stomach pain. 9 of these children had autism, and 8 of the 9 had parents who thought the symptoms of their autism had developed after the vaccine for measles, mumps, and rubella, or the MMR vaccine, was administered. This was not a randomized controlled trial, nor even a scientific study. It was merely a description of a small group of children. To be honest, it's difficult to imagine that this study could get published in The Lancet today. But based on the beliefs of the parents of those 8 children, a frenzy of fear about vaccines and autism has ensued for more than a decade. That's the topic of this week's Healthcare Triage. Let me start with some caveats. I'm a pediatrician and a health services researcher. I see kids with autism. I treat kids with autism. I've even been part of funded NIH research to improve the ways we screen for and diagnose autism in children. It's a real condition that is increasing in prevalence and has a significant impact on children and families across the world. I do not deny in any way that we need to do more about autism, but it has nothing to do with vaccines. And every dollar that we waste on that topic is a dollar we can't spend on important research or treatment to help children with autism and their families. The initial article I mentioned in The Lancet was not a study. It had no real statistics and proved no association or causation. But it caused so much concern that it led to a whole bunch of real studies to combat it. Just 1 year later, in 1999, a study was published in the same journal. No difference was seen in the age of diagnosis for those who did and did not receive vaccines. That meant that either there was no association between MMR and autism, or that it was too weak an association to be detected even in a larger sample of children. Some were unimpressed. They still were concerned. In 2001, a study was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association that looked at data on over 10,000 kindergartners born in California from 1980 through 1994. The incidence of autism over that time increased from 44 per 100,000 births to 208 per 100,000 births. That's a 373% increase. MMR coverage, on the other hand, rose from 72% to 82%, a relative rise of only 14%. It was determined in this study that the relatively small increase in MMR could not possibly be responsible for the huge increase seen in autism. The next year, in 2002, a study was published in the New England Journal of Medicine that followed all children born in Denmark from 1991 through 1998. They obtained data on over 537,000 children born in those years. They could find no association between the development of autism and the age of vaccination, the time since vaccination, or even the date of vaccination. That same year, a similar study was published in the journal Pediatrics. It followed over 535,000 children in Finland, born between 1982 and 1986. It too could find no association between the MMR vaccine and autism. In 2004, The Lancet published another study, which matched 1,294 kids with autism against 4,469 kids without it. They found no relationship between the MMR vaccine and autism. In 2004, 10 of the 12 authors of that first Lancet paper retracted the supposition that the MMR vaccine could cause autism. This kind of thing is unbelievably rare in the medical literature. An 11th author could not be contacted before the retraction. Only one researcher, the main one in fact, held firm. For the record, that researcher is no longer licensed to practice medicine in the United Kingdom. In 2005, a systematic review, or study of studies, examining the effectiveness and unintended effects of the MMR vaccine was published in the Cochrane Collaboration. They identified 31 studies which met the criteria for their review. After a thorough investigation, even though the MMR could be associated with a number of side effects or other issues, there was no evidence for an association between the vaccine and autism. And in 2012, they updated their work. This time, the research they found included 5 randomized controlled trials, 1 controlled trial, 27 cohort studies, 17 case control studies, 5 time series trials, 1 case crossover trial, 2 ecological studies, and 6 self-controlled case series studies. All of these together involved about 14,700,000 children. And in all that data, they could find no link between vaccines and autism. Because there is no link. And another study, no matter how many times you ask for one, isn't going to overcome this massive amount of data. Humans try to make sense of the world by seeing patterns. When they see a disease or condition that tends to appear around the time a child is a year or so old, as autism does, and that is also the age the kids get particular shots, they want to put those things together. Parents watch kids more carefully after they get shots. Sometimes they pick up on symptoms then. But just because two things happen at the same time doesn't mean that one caused the other. This is why we need careful scientific studies. And as I've outlined here, there have been many, many such studies that have failed to find any real evidence to support the hypothesis that vaccines cause autism. And don't tell me it's the mercury in thimerosal that's to blame. There has been no thimerosal in infant vaccines since 2003, and autism hasn't disappeared in the last decade. This was all because of one paper a decade and a half ago that described the beliefs of the parents of 8 children with autism. And that's what makes the next part in this all the more tragic. In 2011, the British Medical Journal released an article which described in detail how that 1998 Lancet paper wasn't just junk science, it was a lie. It described how the main author, the only one who still supports its findings, changed the records, changed the stories, and changed the numbers to create the appearance of an association where none existed. The journalist who wrote the BMJ article tracked down the patients in the study and showed how none of their stories or information matched up to what was published in the final paper. He found that there were discrepancies as to whether the children actually had regressive autism. He found that there were falsifications and other symptoms that were alleged to cause the autism. He even discovered that dates had been changed. Although the Lancet paper alleged that 8 of the 12 patients reported symptoms days after the MMR vaccine, the BMJ investigation confirmed that for almost all of these children, that wasn't the case. And if that wasn't bad enough, it turned out that all of the patients had been recruited by anti-MMR campaigners. The study was also commissioned and paid for by a group that planned litigation against the vaccine manufacturers. The British Medical Journal called the original Lancet paper a fraud. It's easy to become cynical about people's loss of trust and understanding in science, to the point that you think it's unlikely that we will ever be able to convince some people that the MMR vaccine is safe. That's a tragedy in and of itself. It's easy to believe that the perpetrator of this fraud will not suffer the repercussions he deserves. Many still continue to lionize him and believe him to be a victim of some powerful cabal. It's hard for me to be dispassionate about those who abuse the trust people give physicians. I get even more riled up when someone violates the rules of ethical science. I think it's likely that children have not been given an MMR vaccine because of this fraud. I think it's likely children have gotten sick because of this fraud. I think it's likely some children have died. I hope we can find some way to change that in the future. Such a fraud.
This week, finally, reality began to dawn. Not quackery, urban myth, and belief, but physiology and contagion and sickness.
Now to the latest on the measles outbreak. The government says 102 people are infected across 14 states now. And the American Academy of Pediatrics is urging families to vaccinate their children against the disease.
Measles outbreak, the biggest in years and traced back to Disneyland.
The measles outbreak spreads to a fifth Bay Area county. One local pediatrician accuses vaccination opponents of undermining a basic survival concept.
Yes, they did, which is why this outbreak was literally inevitable. The measles, mumps, rubella vaccine had essentially eradicated those childhood diseases in the United States. But when parents began to stop vaccinating their kids, they were creating not just potential patients, but vectors spreading the disease to the vulnerable, such as the baby's pre-vaccination age infected this week in a Chicago daycare center. And whose fault is all of this? Well, mainly, it's the media's fault. The nightmare began in 1998 when a British con man named Dr. Andrew Wakefield faked results and published an article in the prestigious medical journal The Lancet fraudulently claiming a link between the MMR vaccine and autism. It was a lie, which the journal should have figured out long before finally retracting the article 12 years later. By then, the bogus linkage had already spawned a movement of heartbroken parents struggling to understand what or who was to blame for their children's afflictions. Trading as it was on the counterfeit currency of pseudoscience, that movement first languished as a relatively obscure internet subculture, until it was given vast exposure and lethal credibility by the media. The likes of Larry King and Oprah simply could not resist the apparent controversy, combined with the celebrity of the anti-vaccinators' sexpot spokesperson, Jenny McCarthy. Here she was on CNN in 2012.
So you ask any mother in the autism community if we'll take the flu, the measles, over autism any frickin' day of the week. So I think they need to wake up and stop hurting our kids.
McCarthy isn't trained in medicine, virology, or pharmacology. She's a Playboy playmate turned TV personality. But her son, Evan, had been diagnosed with autism, and she's a blonde bombshell. For newsrooms, especially TV newsrooms, this was in every sense a no-brainer. And McCarthy was invited to peddle the dangerous vaccines canard far and wide. Here she was on Oprah explaining why medical experts are wrong, and she is right.
My science is named Evan, and he's at home. That's my science.
In the past 5 years, Wakefield himself lost his license to practice medicine, and not a single scientific study has located any correlation whatsoever between vaccines and autism. But the myth persists. And why?
because though the science is unequivocal, the media are not.
The U.S. measles outbreak and the vaccine controversy, parents, doctors, even politicians now weighing in on both sides.
First on the rundown this morning, the escalating number of measles cases and the growing debate over vaccinations. It's turning into a full-fledged political firestorm.
As the measles outbreak spreads to 14 states across the country, the debate over vaccinations intensifies.
Those clips aren't from 1998. They are from this week. For crying out loud, there is no controversy. There is no debate. Cynical politicians like Rand Paul and Chris Christie may pander all they want to frightened moms and the tinfoil hat crowd, just as 49 U.S. senators can deny man's role in climate change. But there is no rational basis for their beliefs. They are simply wrong. And when the media frames such idiocy as one side of a debate, they are not only legitimizing ignorance and demagoguery, they are threatening the lives of children. Here's the thing about reality. It doesn't care what your opinion is. It doesn't care what your ideology is. It doesn't care what you believe in your heart. It doesn't care what a website says, and it doesn't even care what a majority of Americans think is true. Reality just is. It can't be balanced by lies, superstition, or even true conviction. And any attempt to do so courts catastrophe by aiding and abetting very dangerous fools.
So there's a measles outbreak right now. It is there are more than 100 people across 14 states that have been infected. The outbreak has been traced to somebody, patient zero, at Disneyland in California. And apparently, or there are a lot of doctors that agree that the reason that California started this outbreak is because there are a lot of Californians who are refusing to vaccinate their children.
Okay, so when I said that Californians don't get sick, I didn't mean that you guys don't have to vaccinate. I said you guys are more robust due to your incredibly positive living conditions, not that you guys were invincible and no longer had to take care of such things like vaccination.
Yeah, well, you know, you have a lot of, you have people like Jenny McCarthy, Rob Schneider, Holly Robinson, Pete. These are all celebrities who have signed on to the absolutely scientifically disproven claim that vaccinations are linked to autism. So there's the MMR vaccine. It vaccinates against measles, mumps, and rubella.
Mm-hmm.
And most schools and school districts require you to vaccinate your children before they can go to school. There are some exemptions to that. One of them is a medical exemption. So, for example, if little Timmy has cancer and he's immunosuppressed and his body can't handle the immunizations, his parents can go to the doctor, his oncologist, get a doctor's note explaining why little Timmy can't get vaccinated. There are also religious exemptions where you can say, Jesus didn't like vaccinations, and therefore I don't like vaccinations. And you can be exempt from, if the Department of Education agrees with you that it is part of your religious belief system to not vaccinate, then you can get a religious exemption. There's also a personal exemption, which basically means I don't want to vaccinate my goddamn kid because I just don't feel like it. And that is where everybody who is not getting medical exemptions, I honestly think the only legitimate exemption is a medical exemption. I think the religious exemption is bullshit. But we in this country tend to be big fans of things like freedom of religion.
So we're
all that stuff.
So we're actively questioning science more aggressively than we question religion in this country. Right?
We've been doing that.
Questioning science, but like we're questioning science. Like I understand if you're like if you want to question like the presence of Mars, great, whatever, knock stuff out. We've never been there. We sent some robots, great. But I thought like the science that's directly around you is the science that we don't question. Like the science that has been tested on millions of people because we're all available. You get lots of humans, an infinite supply of humans to test your stuff on, and when you find out something works, you get to run it back over and over again. Something like various vaccinations that have kept us safe for 50, 60, 80, 100 years.
Yeah. I mean, measles was supposedly eradicated in 2000 in the United States, but you know, doctors still recommend that parents vaccinate their children to prevent the spreading of the disease of diseases that come from overseas. And so, I mean, to get a little bit scientific here, the real reason that this outbreak is occurring is because we have dropped below the necessary vaccination level that is required for herd immunity. And herd immunity, as I understand it, is essentially a level at which enough people are vaccinated so that it prevents the spread of the disease, and so that if, you know, one person does have the disease, so many people are vaccinated that it won't spread, and it'll also help keep people who are not vaccinated from getting the disease. So for people who are immunosuppressed, like little Timmy with cancer, he actually needs Jenny from the block to get vaccinated, because Jenny from the block is very, very healthy. So she gets the vaccine. And so basically she and all of her healthy friends are helping little Timmy and all of his cancer-ridden friends from contracting measles.
Of course Jenny from the block is healthy. Jennifer Lopez is a multimillionaire. She's good to go. Of course she's a healthy, so she's good to go. Yeah, this is without question. Jennifer Lopez should be getting her vaccinations. Yes, I don't know why she would stop. It'd be rude.
Exactly. And so the CDC estimates, I actually was writing a little article about this, so I have all this information fresh in my head. Mm-hmm. The CDC estimates that kindergartners need to maintain a vaccination level of about 92 to 95%. So that means 92 to 95% of all 5- and 6-year-olds need to be vaccinated in order to maintain herd immunity, in order to protect those little kids, the sickly kids, from contracting diseases like chickenpox, measles, mumps, rubella, what have you. That herd immunity level has dropped. For example, in Marin County, which is right here in the Bay Area, there are something like, I think in 2013, something like 7.8% of parents opted out of vaccinating their kids, claiming that there was some sort of personal exemption. Isn't even medical or religious. It's just a bunch of hippies who are watching Jenny McCarthy talk about vaccines lead to autism, and they're refusing to vaccinate their kids because they're like, I don't want to. Meanwhile, they're sending their kids to school, and a bunch of unvaccinated kids are threatening the lives of kids who literally cannot get vaccinated because the vaccines might kill them. And so when you think about it, it's really truly ridiculous, because there are some school districts in California that prohibit bringing peanut butter into school. So kids are not allowed to bring peanut butter sandwiches or anything peanut butter related, because peanut allergies are so prevalent. Little kids can die going to anaphylactic shock. So the best thing to do is to just ban peanut butter in schools. So they're banning peanut butter. Meanwhile, they're letting potentially disease-ridden children wander around willy-nilly. Maybe they have measles, maybe they don't. If you get measles, you're contagious for about 2 days before you even get any symptoms. So you could just be disease-ridden, spreading measles around your school because your parents don't want to vaccinate, but don't eat any peanut butter in school.
I don't have any issue with you having a bad feeling about science. Anti-vaccination people specifically, I don't mind if you have a bad feeling about science. There's certainly enough movies and comic books that it can affect what you feel about science. But first, you need to look at science then. If you have a bad feeling about anything science dictates, then look it up. Science tends to have lots of data. Real science tends to have lots of provable data and things you can just look up in your leisure time. Available things that you can then, if you have a bad feeling about vaccinations, which is your right to have a bad feeling about something, you really need to spend some energy, looking up the dangers of you going through with this bad feeling and letting this dictate how you take care of your children. Because you as a parent can have a terrible feeling about it. It's your parent. You hear things differently. Your life experience is taken in another direction. But for the sake of your children, please do some mild research. Just any level of research would do. It's very simple to find out that it's best to vaccinate your children. Even like you said, just for the benefit of other children.
Right.
Of other kids. Not even your kids. Other kids need your kids to be vaccinated, which is what would push me in the right direction. It's like, so it's actual proof that I need my kids. My kid can save the other kids. And that'd be great, because my kid, you know, at a certain age, my kids are not doing anything like little Muppets. They don't do anything anyway. So the least I can do is have them being vaccinated and saving the lives of other kids, because they ain't going to do anything else but cost me money. The little Muppets running around at 5 not doing anything. That's the least I can do with this little Muppet I have, waiting for it to grow into something that can contribute to society, is vaccinate it and not have it tangibly get other children sick.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing is about science is that there's always going to be a certain amount of junk science out there. So if you are prone to paranoia or you're prone to giving in to these bad feelings, or if you are of a mindset to where you believe something and any facts to the contrary will never get through to you, aka conservatives. Although in this case there's no real partisan divide in anti-vaxxers. They come from left and right. A lot of libertarians. But you know, there are studies out there that say, oh, yeah, you know, vaccines are linked to autism. And so if you're believing junk science, if you're believing science that hasn't been peer reviewed, then you might be inclined to be like, oh, crap, my kid's going to get autism. But part of the problem with this whole idea of, oh, well, I'm not going to vaccinate my kid because autism, is that it sort of seems like people would rather die of measles than potentially have an autistic kid. Mm-hmm. And there is actually an autistic woman who has been sort of firing back at anti-vaxxers, saying that they're treating her as if she's a monster because they think that autism is a worse fate than dying of measles. Yep. And so, you know, she says that it just doesn't make sense how scared anti-vaxxers are of autism.
Yep.
To the point where they are willing to expose their child to a disease that could kill them. Rather than take the risk of having an autistic child, even though there is no link between autism and vaccination. So it's really just multiple levels of fuckery that we're dealing with here.
That's so much hearsay that literally it boggles the mind. I almost need so people who are anti-vaccination are fearful of their children getting autism to the degree where they would suggest their kids could die instead of having autism, even though autism is something purely, entirely manageable, especially compared to dangerous, lethal diseases that we're trying to avoid.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm. Okay.
That's pretty much how it goes. And there are some people who are just like, well, you know, if you get, sometimes people die. You get measles and you die, that just happens. You know, maybe there's something wrong with you. Like, this is what some of these anti-vaxxers are saying to parents who are like, my kid has leukemia. Can you please get vaccinated? Because we really need the healthy people to get vaccinated to protect kids like mine.
Oh, you ever want to hear a story about me running over somebody and backing up over them like Suge Knight is when I hear somebody tell me to my face that sometimes your kid may have to die of measles to my face?
Right.
Oh my God. You better tell me that on a message board. There's no way you tell me that at a PTA meeting or any type of school function. That's when the chair goes airborne, Imani. Trust me. Please.
Yeah, I mean, there's this woman, and she's an anti-vaccine activist, this woman in Minnesota, who literally said that, she said, yes, on occasion, someone gets measles and dies, but you can't base your life on a few people. You have to ask, what's wrong with them? Why did they die when most people don't die?
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's bananas. And so some people are suggesting that states that have this this personal exemption rule, abolish it. Because essentially, if all the people who are not vaccinating their kids because they don't want to, or Jenny McCarthy or whatever, if they start vaccinating their kids, then we'll get back up to that level of vaccination required for herd immunity. And herd immunity protects everybody. And the funniest, here's an interesting little tidbit. The two states that don't have any exemptions, no exemptions. You have to vaccinate your kid unless they only have medical exemptions. Oh, I think they only have medical and religious exemptions. There are not that many people that claim religious exemptions because they actually can question whether or not it's sincere. Like, because a lot of times people will go, or from what I've been reading, people will go and ask for a religious exemption, and then when they're asked why, they list a bunch of health reasons. And so the person who's deciding whether to give you the exemption will be like, well, actually, you're just trying to couch all of your health-related paranoia in religion. It's not really that sincere or genuine, so no, you can't have this religious exemption. So at any rate, Mississippi and West Virginia are two states that do not have this personal exemption. Their vaccination rates are like 99.7%.
Yes.
So if we all die of bubonic plague because a bunch of assholes won't vaccinate their kids, it's going to be up to Mississippi and West Virginia to rebuild civilization.
There is a kind of a conventional wisdom, which often is not conventional, or it is certainly not wisdom, with regard to the anti-vaccine movement, that it is just kind of hippie liberals that are against vaccination. And it turns out that that is not at all the case. We should not assume that because we are seeing some of the outbreaks in areas that are traditionally considered liberal areas, northern San Francisco, southern Marin County, etc., we also are seeing low vaccination rates in groups that are by no means hippie liberals. And this includes the Amish in Ohio, Orthodox Jews in Brooklyn, by no means, Lewis, groups that are traditionally considered liberal. And we actually now have some data about this. There's a 2013 paper in PLOS1 where Stefan Lewandowski and two of his colleagues studied what makes people reject vaccines. And they got pretty complex results. First of all, they found that while political conservatism made some people a little bit more pro-vaccine, having a free market ideology also associated with conservatism in the U.S. also led people to be against vaccines, towards having, I guess, what you would call skepticism towards vaccines, although I don't think that's the term we should be using, and I'll tell you why a little bit later. In 2014, Yale's Dan Kahan published results from a nationally representative survey, which led him to conclude that the ideology of vaccine fears is not driven by left-wing ideology. In fact, he found that respondents formed more negative assessments of the risk and benefits of childhood vaccines as they became more conservative and identified more strongly with the Republican Party, however, to a slight degree. So what we can certainly say with certitude, Lewis, is that the anti-vaccine movement is not a hippie liberal movement. And what we can say with some degree of certitude is that there may be a slight correlation between conservative ideology and being against vaccination. But what we are abundantly clear to us is that this is a movement that is on both sides of the political spectrum, albeit for different reasons.
I think there's a reaction for most people when they hear anti-vaccine. You just automatically kind of think of a certain type of person from California. And that's just, when this whole thing started, that just happened to be a hot spot for a lot of the anti-vaccine activity.
It did. And, if we explore the kind of more left-wing ideologies that might make someone anti-vaccine, part of it is certainly distrust of corporations. But on the right, you see distrust of government agencies like the CDC, for example, being used to justify the exact same anti-vaccine sentiment. So I think what we could say, Lewis, is that whether you're on the left or right, you can find reasons that correlate with your political ideology to reject vaccines and ignore the science.
And we have discussed studies that point out that Republicans, the Republican mind, tends to be governed more by fear. And certainly being terrified of vaccines and a big brother government would lend itself to this type of thinking.
And that's why I think, going back to what I said before, that the term skeptic is not an appropriate term for someone who is against vaccines. Because if you look at the definition of being skeptical, if you're skeptical, you have doubts as to the truth of something. And anyone who actually puts their fears or religious beliefs aside for a second and looks at the science, they would not be skeptical based on the actual definition of skepticism. They would be deniers. They might be fear-mongers. But skeptical, I don't think, is the right term to apply to those who are against vaccines.
Maybe there are a few people who are skeptical. I think if you are skeptical, you do the research. I think if you are afraid, you don't.
I'll fight the man that turns on me. If I must fight or die, I will fight for justice. Laws I can abide. I'll try to fight with courage, to always give my best. For I must fight the fear itself that grows inside my breast. Fear is a villain, and he grips you late at night. He'll catch you when your back is turned. He's watching you. So don't be afraid of the dark. dark and lonesome voices speak to you.
The social science on this shows that when you come out and vilify anti-vaxxers or are aggressive in talking about anti-vaxxers, that it actually hardens their position on some level. And there's some concern, and I think it's legitimate, that if President Obama came out strongly, that it would then become a partisan issue. That, and that's the danger here. It's not a danger that I have to deal with, frankly, because, you know, we're talking on this program to tens of thousands as opposed to hundreds of thousands or millions. But, I mean, certainly we've gotten a couple emails, you know, that link to Gary Null. And like I say, the assertions, you know, are not backed up by any links to the actual primary resource of data. And so it's a fascinating development. I mean, here's a story. And I, you know, again, you got to be careful with some of this stuff because it's hard to know whether or not someone is trying to demonize people. But this is pretty stunning. There was a story, a CNN.com story. And apparently they did some reporting at the Phoenix Children's Hospital. Maybe they were there for the Super Bowl. I don't know. Somebody went in and did that. And the story of a 10-month-old, Eli. Too young to get vaccinated, but would be especially vulnerable to serious complications of measles, such as deafness and brain damage or even death. His parents have a bigger worry. If Eli does have the measles, he could give it to his 3-year-old sister, Maggie, who has leukemia. And this is a family, the Jacks. And at in this story, this was a couple of days ago, they were afraid that Eli had the measles. I'm not sure what the update is on this. But according to Arizona health officials, the woman at the clinic who put the Jacks children in danger was herself infected by members of a family that don't vaccinate, got measles during the visit to Disneyland. Measles are incredibly, I think I mentioned this yesterday, incredibly contagious. I think like 90% of people who are exposed to the measles get it. So this week, Maggie and Eli's father, Dr. Tim Jacks, wrote a blog post in which he expressed his feelings to this family that didn't vaccinate. And he talks about all the things that you would imagine. He says, you know, you've endangered others. It's not just a decision that you're making for yourself. You're making it for society, et cetera, et cetera. But CNN found another guy who responded to this. And this response is, this is bizarre to me. And this could be a function of what we've just talked about in terms of like the polarization and people, you know, get their backs up against the wall. Dr. Jack Wolfson said it's the Jacks family, this is the family, who should keep themselves at home, not him. Wolfson is an Arizona cardiologist. He refuses to vaccinate his 2 young sons. He said the family that didn't vaccinate and endangered Jack's children did nothing wrong. Quote, it's not my responsibility to inject my child with chemicals. It's a cardiologist. In order for a child like Maggie to be supposedly healthy. As far as I'm concerned, it's very likely that her leukemia is from vaccinations in the first place. I'm not going to sacrifice the well-being of my child. My child is pure. It's not my responsibility to protecting their child. CNN asked Wolfson if he could live with himself if his unvaccinated child got another child gravely ill. I could live with myself easily, he said. It's an unfortunate thing that people die, but people die. I'm not going to put my child at risk to save another child. He blamed the Jacks family for taking Maggie to the clinic for care. If a child is so vulnerable like that, they shouldn't be going out into society. I'm sorry. I mean, it's one thing to subscribe to quack medicine and to believe that the entire vaccination regime is a scheme, I guess, to enrich pharmaceutical industry and whatnot. But it's another to be such a huge dick about it. Sometimes I have no sense at all, as most flawed men are wont to do.
News in a nutshell. In the news today are vaccines, or how to avoid killing and maiming children. After the outbreak of measles at the Magic Kingdom, vaccines are the talk of the town. Why? Because a growing number of parents who choose to not vaccinate their children have given measles a leg up. The anti-vaccination movement is made up of everyone from left-wing My Body is a Temple types to right-wing anti-government conspiracy theorists. They're one not-so-big, not-so-happy family basing their beliefs on a single discredited and fully bogus study and or hatred of government mandates. Either way, fewer people vaccinated means more sick people. Timmy's not vaccinating can infect your too-young-to-vaccinate bouncing bundle of now-infected joy. Who cares about vaccine successes? To anti-vaccinators, they are dangerous. First, it was just a retired Playboy bunny spreading phony fears not based in science. Now, two potential presidential candidates are getting into the act. Never mind the coal dust and lead. It's the vaccines that are hurting your babies. And what better way to demonstrate your conservative credentials than by letting people make a choice? Whether they kill their neighbors or not. So forget the childhood radiation dosing box or the carcinogenic transport vehicle. It's clearly vaccines that are hurting our children, right? Good night, and go vaccinate.
Vaccinate your kids, vaccinate your kids, bloody vaccinate your bloody kids, bloody idiots, vaccinate your kids, bloody vaccinate your bloody kids. I know you read some vague statistic that said it might make them autistic, but if you'd paid attention, you would know that was all debunked 10 years ago. No, it's not some grand conspiracy by Big Pharma, it's just chemistry. Yes, it's toxic, that's how vaccine works, you ignorant jerks. So, vaccinate your kids, bloody vaccinate your bloody kids, you bloody idiots, vaccinate your kids, bloody vaccinate your bloody kids. See, there's this thing called herd immunity. You're endangering your community. Measles can be passed along and to kids whose parents weren't as dumb as you. Yes, you have the right to choose, but still, not to make your friends and neighbors ill. Measles isn't just like getting zits. You can die from it. So, vaccinate your kids, bloody vaccinate your bloody kids, you bloody idiots, vaccinate your kids, do what you already should have did. Just bloody vaccinate your bloody kids.
Toast out with a fork, do your own electrical work, teach yourself how to fly, eat a 2 week old unrefrigerated pie. Dumb ways to die, so many dumb ways to die.
You've reached the activism portion of today's show. Now that you're informed and angry, here's what you can do about it. Today's activism, fighting the anti-vaxxer movement with voices for vaccines. Now, it looks like this run of I can't believe this is even a thing that needs action type segments is ongoing. Measles, a serious illness even baby boomers barely remember, is back. More than 100 people in 17 states have confirmed cases, and Disney World had a double-digit outbreak just before Christmas. Why? Because for a brief glimmer of a moment, vaccines looked like they might be risky, and a generation of parents were scared into opting their children out. Many, like CNN contributor and Daily Beast columnist Sally Cohn, regrets that decision now and are talking about why they've changed their positions. Speaking out can get you attacked by right and left fringes alike. This is one of those rare topics that has skeptics on both sides. Storytelling combined with science has become a necessary tool, as it has with so many issues recently. Polio survivor Menda Dentler pleads with readers at Time.com to vaccinate their children with her graphic, brave story of surgeries and pain and overcoming it all to become the first hand cyclist to complete the Kona Ironman. Dentler writes, quote, "Most people who oppose vaccines don't know firsthand what these diseases can do to you. They should meet me." Writer and parent Jessica Valenti joins in with her column at The Guardian, quote, "When I read quotes from parents denying any social responsibility to vaccinate, saying things like, 'My child is pure, it's not my responsibility to be protecting their child,' it makes me livid. Where once we said it takes a village, these days some people don't care if the village burns to the ground so long as their precious snowflake is left standing," unquote. Valenti's piece points out why the right wing loves this movement. Supposedly, it's about personal choice, a topic that they're keen on, unless, of course, it has something to do with someone's uterus. And the left can get taken in as part of the whole pure and healthy trend in things like food and cleaning supplies and so on. What both sides miss is that the anti-vaxxer fringe isn't just awful because they're risking the rampant return of nearly eradicated diseases. They're promoting some serious bigotry and discrimination as well. Maria Mora has a straightforward, important reminder at sheknows.com for people who still refuse to believe the thorough debunking of studies celebs like Jenny McCarthy use to fuel the fear of vaccines. She writes, "Autism isn't a punishment. It isn't a boogeyman. It shouldn't be what keeps parents who vaccinate their kids up at night. Vaccines don't cause autism, but beyond that, it's grossly ableist to talk about fear of autism in a way that pretty much flat out says, I'd rather risk my child and your child dying from the measles rather than raise their risk of becoming autistic." Now just imagine the message that sends to people with autism. With so much to combat, we as concerned, science and empathy-appreciating citizens are lucky to have Voices for Vaccines as a resource. They are a parent-led, evidence-based nonprofit with a team of doctors and immunologists who serve on their board. The Tools tab at Voices for, that's F-O-R spelled out, vaccines.org, has printable handouts, archived conference calls, and law manuals on vaccines as resources, community and parent toolkits, new and expectant parent toolkits, links to their Kick the Flu Out of School campaign, because yes, people do still die from the flu, and a primer for writing op-eds to your local news outlets and for publication. Their social media feeds are active, current, and full of useful information, as well as links to local actions and updates. Visit their page, get educated, and help spread the facts to keep the immune compromised and vulnerable in our society protected. Also, a quick heads up for those who thought their vaccine schedule ended sometime in college, you very likely need a pertussis booster with your next tetanus shot to protect against the increased risk of whooping cough. It's back as well. It's awful. You have an increased risk if you spend time with children, and you should ask your doctor if you're due for one, as immunity does actually wear off over time. The segment notes include all of the links to this information as well as additional resources, and as always, this and every activism segment we produce is archived and organized under the Activism tab at bestoftheleft.com. If supporting evidence-based medicine and the health of your friends and neighbors matters to you, be sure to hit the share buttons to spread the word about Voices for Vaccines via social media so that others in your network can get educated too. Everybody says they won't change. But nobody wants to do what it takes to make it better. Everybody complains, but nobody ever wants to take the blame. And nobody ever does anything. I wake up in the morning, and what do I see? I see my reflection in the mirror.
Where do we go with this thing? I mean, if we know that we made a conscious decision over the last 50 years or so to move from everybody being immune to these childhood diseases because they got them as children to everybody being immune from these childhood diseases, and these diseases are deadly diseases when you're an adolescent or an adult. Mumps will cause sterility. Measles will cause birth defects. I mean, there's bad people can die from them as well, but there's really serious side effects to these diseases, these quote childhood diseases. And so, I mean, there is a discussion, a rational, thoughtful, logical discussion to be had about whether the best way, you know, what is the best way to guarantee that everybody in the United States has immunity to measles and mumps and rubella? When I was growing up in the 50s, parents, if one of their kids had one of those diseases, they would literally invite all the other kids over. We had, you know, measles parties, mumps parties, chicken pox parties. Because everybody understood that that those diseases you wanted to get when you were young. You don't want to get them when you're older, when they can cause all kinds of damage. And everybody was immune because they'd all gotten them when they were young. And people went, you know, my mom took me it was like a birthday party at this kid's house. I don't remember if he had measles or mumps. It was one of them. And she was like, you know, you're going to get this. And now, I'm not sure we even had a vaccine back then for these diseases. This would have been like in 1955, 56, something like that. But now we do. And you could say, okay, well, you know, we decided to go from parents inoculating their kids basically by getting them sick when they're little. And there are some consequential side effects to that. Some kids ended up deaf. Some kids ended up blind. Some kids ended up dead. I mean, these diseases are, even when children get them, these childhood diseases can be tough. Particularly, you know, pertussis, you know, whooping cough. I mean, that kills kids. And that's not a disease that people went out of their way to have their kids get exposed to. So, you know, you could make the argument that we've made this decision to go from having naturally induced herd immunity to artificially induced herd immunity via the route of vaccines, and that that's very profitable for the pharmaceutical industry and the medical industry. And that, you know, at the theoretical, hypothetical public health level, may be reasonably accurate, but it also may be the best thing. I mean, there's a lot fewer side effects to a vaccine, and yeah, two of my three kids had very strong reactions, particularly the MMR vaccine. They got really sick for a couple of days, but they didn't die of whooping cough. They didn't become sterile from getting the mumps when they were 16 years old. They didn't have children with birth defects from getting the measles or rubella when they were pregnant. Well, none of them have been pregnant, but you get my point. This is, you know, this falls into the category of things like seatbelts and safety helmets. There is a point where you say, and frankly, income taxes. There is a point where you say, this is what we do for the public good. This is what we all do for ourselves.
And we're back. I hope you found that as interesting, as informative as I did. Well, that's about all the time we have this week. I'd like to remind you, my loyal listeners, that CITR's Fun Drive is just around the corner. It's a time when you can show your support for alternative media like Radio Free Thinker. Lord knows I ain't getting any kind of grant from this government, well, at least not while Harper's at the helm. So be prepared, save your pennies, and get ready to donate. More details to come. Lastly, we probably do have a few minutes, so I'm going to leave a little Easter egg at the end after the extra. So this is Don saying, please donate, and eyes open, minds on.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent.
Thanks for listening to Radio Free Thinker. Remember to visit us online at radiofreethinker.com and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. If you have any local skeptical events you would like us to mention on the air, email us at info@radiofreethinker.com.
Venture to the stars. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. Rising of the Milky Way. The cosmos is full beyond measure. Elegant truths of exquisite interrelationships.
parents hosting measles parties? Seems pretty extreme, right? Well, it turns out that it's pretty inaccurate. Hey everyone, Julia here for D News. Lately, there's been a lot of buzz about these so-called measles parties. The report seems to originate out of Marin County, California, where a local mom told a news station that another parent approached her with an idea. Have a playdate with another kid who has the measles. This idea kicked off a media frenzy this month, with outlets like Fox, PBS, and others reporting on it. So why would someone deliberately infect their kid? The idea of a measles party is to boost a kid's immune system by intentionally exposing them to a virus. Parents wanting to avoid vaccines make their healthy kids hang out with sick kids so that they might catch it. The idea is that the disease is something similar to chickenpox, mild but annoying, almost a rite of passage in childhood. But the fact is, measles can be deadly. Thankfully, there doesn't seem to be credible evidence that measles parties are actually happening. The California Department of Public Health said they do not have any information about measles parties, but they strongly recommend against the intentional exposure of children to measles, as it unnecessarily places the exposed children at potentially grave risk and could contribute to further spread of the outbreak. Pox parties, on the other hand, were a real thing. In the not-too-distant past, before the invention of a vaccine, kids got chicken pox, a nasty, itchy illness which triggers painful, itchy blisters to appear on the skin. I remember how horrible it was. Taking oatmeal baths and rubbing embarrassing cream on my arms, the itching was torture. But it's usually mild and lasts only a few days. Before the days of the chickenpox vaccine, pox parties became a thing. Get infected with the virus as a kid, deal with it, and move on. And getting the family sick at once might mean less time missed at school and work. There were also rumors of a lollipop ring. Parents would get their sick kids to lick a lollipop in the hopes that it would coat it with the virus, and then they would mail it to someone so they would give it to their kid. And now that some parents distrust vaccines, pox parties are popular again. We might remember chickenpox was just an annoying blip in our childhood, yet before the chickenpox vaccine became available, there were 100 to 150 deaths from chickenpox among the U.S. annually. According to the study in the journal Clinical Infectious Diseases, there's even evidence that kids who get chickenpox are four times as likely to have a stroke during the 6 months following infection. So, the bottom line is that if you want to boost your kids' immune system safely, vaccinate them. Vaccines give a low dose or deactivated strain of a virus to allow your body to create antibodies against it. This way, when you come across an actual strain of the virus, your body can fight it off without any of the nasty side effects or complications.
It's known as the information superhighway, a vast network of linked computers bringing the world directly into your home and business.
We're going to take a ride on the internet, and today our destination is the World Wide Web.
Let's start with the basics first.
It's time to get online.
It's time to get online.
Where would you like to go?
The next thing you know, we'll be surfing the net.
We'll be surfing the net.
It'll be cool.
It'll be cool.
You got mail.
It's alright, alright.
It's alright here at your fingertips.
It's alright, alright.
It's alright here at your fingertips.
It's alright, alright.
It's alright here at your fingertips.
Just surf the net. Just surf the net.
Now let me show you how it works.
Just click, 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 click.
And the next thing you know, we'll be surfing the net.
Just click, click, click.
It all comes down to computers communicating.
You down.
Up to the minute, up to the minute, up to the minute information.
It all comes down to computers communicating with fiber optic cables.
Up to the minute, up to the minute, up to the minute information.
It all comes down.
Surf the net.
The internet. The world wide web.